It's the Slightly Correct Political Show.
Hello, yes, hello and welcome back to the Slightly Correct Political Show with Chris Brain, Jeremy Elwood and me, Pat Brittenden. Good to be back for a final one for the year to wrap up. We are with you thanks to the guys from podcasts.co.nz. Check out New Zealand's favourite podcasts at podcasts.co.nz. And we're back. I know we promised at the last one that we'd probably do two this year, but as is the way, we'll do one. But it'll be twice as good.
Well, I think, as is the way too, all the stuff we thought we'd talk about over two has taken its time to develop.
Sure.
So it's only really now that we're getting the full fallout.
Sure, and we were deep in study and meditation and to get ready for this intellectual debate that we're about to have about retard politics.
That's right. I've got so many tabs open on Wikipedia right now. Outrageous.
So let's, the last podcast we did was, I think, the week after the election.
Yes.
After the slaughtering that the Labour Party got, if we're honest.
Yeah, it was biblical.
It was, and we were looking at a National Party who could govern alone. Special votes came in, overseas votes came in, and they lost one. So now technically they can't govern alone, but they're only within one seat.
That's right, they lost one, and that one that they lost went to Andrew Little, didn't it?
I believe so, yeah. Didn't he slide in?
Was
on the
that
list?
The one? I think it was. I think he was the one who scraped in.
Oh my goodness. So this is the deep, I'm pretending not to know for the entertainment. This is the deep research we've got.
Well, that's it.
Are we sure about that?
I'm not 100%, but I'm...
You guys talk, I'm going to look it up.
I'm fairly sure that he was the one who got through on special votes. Which is the way he gets through on everything.
Absolutely.
late sort of rally with special votes and the EPMU getting them through.
Well, we might as well start with that then, obviously. we had yet another leadership race within the Labour Party, and the votes are in, very close. 1.04% was the difference in the end between Andrew Little, who is now, of course, the current Labour leader, and Grant Robertson.
Here's the thing, right? I did a little post about this after it happened, and I'm going to use round figures. It's within a couple of percent. But the caucus voted against Little, 60-40. The membership of the party voted against Little, 60-40. Now, it was something like 57-23, round figures, 60-40. The unions voted for Andrew Little, 75-25. You have a new leader. I think their system is flawed.
I think when one of the things they've been campaigning for years on is that National are a special interest party for
rich bricks. Yep,
that'll do. Then to come through in two separate leadership elections and vote what the unions want over the caucus and the party membership puts you fairly in the same category.
I totally agree. I think it's flawed. I think more importantly, it's outdated. It is. It's an
ironic that it's outdated, and they only brought it in like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
they brought it in for Cunliffe, didn't they?
They brought it in as an official number, a special thing. I mean, Labour was built side by side along with the union movement, and I think it's a nod to their history. They enshrined it in their internal law a couple of years ago,
and now it's screwing them.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's certainly screwed a couple of them. It screwed Grant Robertson, put it that way. Andrew Little's only been there for 10 days or so. I like the makeup of his first cabinet that he's announced. I think he's made some interesting and some sensible choices. I think having Annette King in there as his deputy, at least for the first year, is a smart move.
Good to see some new blood.
Well, no, I do agree. Yeah, I think a lot of people were crying for new blood, but at the same time, outside of the Labour Party membership and outside of the unions, you could argue that for the general public, Andrew Little almost is new blood.
Yeah.
They've seen him around, but we don't really know much about him.
No, true.
So having someone like Annette there who can just handle the party for the first year, I think it was a little odd of him to say that he's going to spend most of the first year travelling the country meeting people, and she's basically going to run Parliament for him. I think that's maybe a little unfortunate. But I think, admittedly, it's been, a week and a half?
Yeah.
it hasn't completely fallen apart yet, which I think by Labour is a new record.
Yeah, you got to maybe within 2 weeks, if we're fair, maybe within 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, they announced the promotions and demotions yesterday, and obviously Gough, Shearer, and Cunliffe, I think, are the last three ranked members?
Give or take 14, 15, and 16.
Yeah, which, I think after that, everyone else is unranked.
Yeah. It was interesting. The debate thing, I don't know how much public cut through it had. I managed to follow a bit of it because I was involved in one of the televised debates. It was interesting to watch. I mean, there was obviously quite a divide between Grant Robertson and David Parker and Andrew Little and Nanai Mahuta, both on policy and also just in attitude. Personally, I would have liked to see a Robertson-Parker co-leadership sort of arrangement. I thought they complemented each other extremely well. Robertson had the charisma. Parker is the policy wonk, always has been. He really knows what he's talking about.
Was that wonk?
Wonk, it was, wonk. Yeah.
Is that a technical, technical term? I'm just checking.
But the one person I did think who came out of it, who sort of was a bit of a bolter in there, and she was never going to win, but Nanai Mahuta really has raised her flag as one of the sort of senior female Māori, whatever you want to label you want to put on her, but she's raised her hand and she is very much going to be part of the future of the party.
Yeah, she was one of the winners well up the list, I think, as well.
Yeah,
they moved up like as a nod to, you know, because the reason Nanai Mahuta got into the race was there wasn't a Māori representative within it. So that's basically, that's why I'm doing it. And then obviously the part of the party that supports Māori Pacific Island have had the nod as well, because Carmel Cipollone and Calvin Davis and her have all jumped up the list to be all top 10, I think.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, going back to your point, Chris, there's a feeling, you know, having an outside, you know, in there as your deputy leader, people might be going, oh, same old, but there is some new blood in there. There is, I mean, the makeup, just simply the physical makeup of the caucus is different than it was two weeks ago, and I think that's good. Very much a work in progress, so you know, it's not a lot I think we can discuss about it.
It's good, but it's good that you gave a bit of a rundown on the race, because wasn't it interesting that the media, after it really took off, there was just silence for weeks. There was nothing about the race.
It's because it felt like it went on for months.
Yeah,
yeah, and also it was. I mean, they were essentially doing a nationwide series of town hall meetings, so there wasn't a huge difference between each meeting. You know, they weren't announcing election policy. They weren't announcing what they were, like the last leadership race we had where Cunliffe ended up coming through the winner. Mm. A lot of what they were talking about was what Labour was going to be, or at least what they were wanting to talk about. What Labour was going to take into the general election. That obviously wasn't the case this time. This was more about style of leadership and the next 3 years. And for the Labour faithful, that might be interesting.
Let's look for
the average punter, it's not.
But let's look at this. Style of leadership, then, you've obviously had more to do with it than Chris or myself. Mm. What is it about, maybe not even that you've seen, but what is it about the new leader in Little and the leadership he's talking about doing that has attracted enough votes, although skewed to the far left, obviously, but that in general has attracted, because obviously if the other two groups, if 40% had a vote, he still wouldn't be there, but has attracted enough vote to actually be there. What is it about him?
The simple answer is I'm not 100% sure. He's by no way the most charismatic of the four who are up there. Like I say, in the debates that I saw, Grant Robertson was easily the best speaker.
And he's great in the House.
Yep.
I mean, he stands head and shoulders above the rest of them.
He didn't seem the most knowledgeable about policy. He seemed a little bit wishy-washy on...
Little this is?
Sorry?
You're talking Little? Little doesn't seem...
Yeah,
right.
I'm talking about Little, yeah. Capital gains, he was very much against, but sort of seemed to have a little trouble articulating why. Aside from that,
Unpopular, I think, is what he said.
No, he certainly wasn't hedging his bets. Right. I should make that clear. He made it very clear that he didn't want to bring it in.
Right.
But it did seem that the main reason for that is because it lost us the last election.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it's in the top 10 reasons Labour lost the last election. I think there's a certain sense of stability to him. Like, he is... Everyone talks about John Key being the kind of guy you could have a beer with. Andrew Little actually is the kind of guy you would have a proper beer with.
Yeah.
You know, if you sat down with John Key for a beer, it would come in a fancy glass, it would cost you $12, and it'd be tapas alongside. You could sit down at a West Coast pub with Andrew Little, have a pint of Spates, and not speak for an hour. Kind of blonde.
I got to tell you, the tapas option sounds pretty fucking delightful.
All right, so here's the question, and I've been thinking about this lots over the last couple of weeks while I've been meditating on this podcast for today. I'll ask you first because I've got some pretty strong opinions on this. But where to from here for Labor? And we'll start with Chris because, Chris, you've been a bit quiet at the moment. And I know, although you're coming from the right, for those people who are just joining us for the first time, Chris, comedian from the right, Jeremy, comedian from the left, me, moron on the middle. Where to for Labor and how do they impact? Because we're already talking about they've lost the next election. So how do they impact the next election? How do they make it a race?
I think what they're doing now with Little and King, it seems to me they're going for stability first, going for a very plain package Labor Party to try and just get everyone pointed in the same direction. So it's non-divisive, I think. It was that Little was sort of almost the non-Robertson option. He's a bit too charismatic, a bit too big as a leader, I think. I think they really wanted to knuckle down and just push forward for maybe the next 6 to 12 months and just try and get a semblance of caucus stability and consensus. I think that's what it feels like to me. They've gone with a very safe, plain option to just try and stabilise.
So what you're saying that that is build the foundation for them to launch into the next election to see what they can do.
To stop falling away.
Right.
I think at the moment they're really trying to concentrate on just consolidating where they've got to, which is bad. Consolidate that and then move forward. You can't keep flailing like they have been. You know, moving capital gains in and then out and then in and making all those kind of sort of wild changes in direction. I think at the moment they just want to snail's pace their way for a little bit.
That also implies, when you talk about that, because that makes sense, it also implies, though, that really they need to stick with Little till the next election. Because if all of a sudden it was someone else in 2 years' time, then they're still in that place of changing direction, bringing things in and bringing things out.
I think that would depend on whether or not they look like they are in with any show of winning the next election. On how he goes, on how this next 18 months goes.
All right. So Jeremy, we've got what they're doing with what Chris said. So where to? How do they then do it for the next election?
Well, firstly, I completely agree with Chris. I think they are forming ranks at the moment. You know, they have realised 3 years too late how fractious they've certainly been, but mm-hmm. more importantly, how they've perceived to have been. So the next 3 years, I agree. I think the next 6 to 12 months is establishing themselves as a unified group, as a party, making people, it was a phrase that came up during a couple of the debates, letting people realize what Labor is, who they are. And then the next 2 years of that is trying to clarify who they would be as a government.
Right.
So I think there's a couple of things they can do. They're going to be, hopefully, I think, a stronger opposition party. Mm-hmm. And I think we've already seen that with Little. He's been quite aggressive over some of the things that we're going to talk about later in this podcast, about calling for the resignation of the State Services Commissioner, he's been pretty clear and not wishy-washy at all about some of these. So I think that's their first year, is to establish themselves as the strongest party in opposition.
Yeah, yeah. To try and differentiate themselves from the Greens.
Absolutely.
Is it going to be a big part of the mission?
And then the next 2 years after that are going to be to establish themselves so that people know what they would be like in government.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're two quite separate things. There was a quite interesting quote that sort of attracted a fair bit of sort of satire, I guess, earlier this week, when David Shearer said in an interview that he didn't make a great leader of the opposition, but he would have made quite a good prime minister. And it's an interesting point, because actually I think he's right.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
As the leader of the opposition, and again, I'm paraphrasing David Shearer here, your job is to say no. Your job is to say that's wrong, stop it. As the leader of a country or as a potential leader of the country, your job is to say, yes, this is where we want to go. This is what we're going to do. So I think the next year is going to be saying no and saying no as a combined caucus.
Yeah.
And I think the next 2 years is going to be trying to establish that alternative.
The example you've just given is exactly why Winston Peters is so much better in opposition than government.
Absolutely.
Because he's perfect at saying no.
Oh, yeah.
And when he says yes, he gets that kind of like pained expression because that word's coming out of his mouth.
He's got it on printed laminated cards.
And I think we can be, I could be very clear about this. I think one of the reasons that John Key has been so successful as Prime Minister is that no one knew him when he was in opposition, because he wasn't really. And you see him in those moments where he gets caught out on something or where he has to criticize something popular, and he flubs it more often than not. Whereas as a prime minister, he's the face of the country. He's that nice bloke you can have tapas with.
Yeah.
So he's been doing a good job at it.
So I agree with everything you guys are saying on some level, but I think the difference that I would throw in here is the Greens connection. In my opinion, the only way Labor's going to make any impact in the next, let's say, 6 years to tend to be able to form a government is if they actually get closer to the Greens. I wonder if the leadership of the Labor Party and the leadership of the Greens need to get together and actually say, okay, you guys, you actually take the far left stuff, run with it, push with it. We're going to stay a bit more centrist. We will support what you want to do, and you will support us, and actually divide those roles up. So they are making themselves different, but what they're doing is they're actually bringing themselves back towards the centre, but actually kind of farming off their stuff to the Greens.
That would be a strategically, I think that would be a great move, but there's no way in the world that's ever going to. The Labor Party are just now trying to band-aid and paper mache over their own cracks. The Greens dislike Labor, I think, vehemently. I think that the fact that they are so centrist already, that they feel... I mean, you've got the Greens spokesman, I'm talking about, you know, disbanding the SIS and the GCSB and...
But it depends what their objective is. I mean, if their objective is to be, you know, and this is the thing, if the Labor objective is to be a good, solid, well-formed Labor Party, I think what you guys are saying exactly is right. If part of the Labor objective is to be the next government... And part of the Greens' objective is to be the government. I think they have to work together. Look, no, I'm not even saying that Russell Mitiria and Andrew stand up together and say, we are, I mean, I'm talking about just basically...
A good old-fashioned backroom deal?
Basically, yeah. Look, I mean, strategic politics saying, this is how we become the next government to implement what we want to do.
But I think we've already discussed many times on this podcast in previous episodes that the left seem completely unable to act strategically.
And this might be the thing they need to learn.
Look, I think you're both right, actually. I think it needs to happen, and I think it's going to be difficult to make it happen. But I do think this might be a little window of opportunity, because everyone's been talking, including ourselves, about how badly Labor did at the last election. It wasn't just Labor, it was the whole left. Now, I know the Greens essentially held their vote, but their own predictions and most people's predictions, including my own, were that they were going to increase their vote. So it is actually a failure for the Greens as well. And I think maybe the Greens need to realize they're not the mainstream second possible opposition party that they have thought they were.
And they're not going to be the major opposition like as part of the projection wants to be.
I think the big thing with the Greens and the attraction for Greens voters is that they're such an ideologically based party and they lack the pragmatism needed to be the strategic partner.
Greens already have provided the funniest post-election story, though, however, which was when their spokesman on alternative medicine, they had one, claimed that we should be funding homeopathy to cure Ebola. Yeah. That was brilliant.
But in saying that, I mean, even though you may abhor the far left, don't you have to applaud Russell Norman for coming out straight away going no publicly to what he did?
Of course. They had to do it very quickly. They talked about, you know, that they believe in science-based, evidence-based, you know, all that stuff. They said all the right things because there's already a slight perception with centre New Zealand, middle New Zealand, that they are a little bit wacky already, and that did not help.
Well, I think we should move on from talking about a potential future government to talking about the one that we do have.
Well, I was just thinking, there's not a heck of a lot to really say about them, isn't it? I mean, wherever you sit, I applaud John Key for giving old Putin a bit of what for at the G20.
They had 26 pickers.
And 26 countries there.
That's right.
Ironically.
What's been kind of interesting for me is I was looking at it the other day, and I didn't really pay much attention to the cabinet reshuffle. Mm. But looking at it now, there's a whole bunch of new blood there that, I mean, we talked about before the election, where was the new blood coming from the National Party? Well, they found some. Mm. I mean, there's half a dozen ministers who I had never heard of.
It's because they've got twice as many MPs as the last term. The Labor's demise,
and a massive cabinet, which is the fashion
of the time, isn't it?
But it's good though, because cabinets. I mean, as you said, because then you can easily wheel in the newbies and say, look at our fresh blood, and still have the experienced ones there probably pulling the strings. But you know.
It has seemed though. I mean, they haven't been controversy free even in the short time since the election. We've had the fallout from the Roger Sutton resignation. We've got at the day that we're recording this, the investigation the commission into the intelligence services is being released. The SIS have been forced to make an apology to Phil Goff. So there's a little bit of that same, same old from before the election. There's quite a lot of the buck passing going on.
Yeah.
I would hate to be a commissioner or a director or anything under this government, because it just seems to be whatever happens.
What about the bitchiest?
The minister's going to shit on you from a great height.
The bitchiest headline so far since the election, with Judith Collins not being allowed to use the honourable title officially. She got left off the list and didn't realise she'd been left off the list. And John Key's come out saying, well, probably wrong that we didn't tell her, but it's because of this investigation. And once the investigation's finished, if she's all clear, she'll get it. So, it was an interesting little headline there earlier on.
Well, I think that does show that's as big a ripple of the internal power struggle in the National Party that you tend to see. They keep that all very in-house, and that I think that was a real, quite a sort of a slap on the wrist in as public a way as National will ever do.
Yeah, and then she'll get her honourable and...
Of course, and she'll...
For services rendered.
So, yeah, so there's a bit of great
to the
deal
milk
going
industry.
On. And you wouldn't expect a great deal to be happening at this time of year either.
No, but then...
lead up to Christmas.
The one thing that they are doing is obviously trying to bolster the SIS with some new legislation there, which, is... troubling.
Yeah, there are some troubling, and New Zealand's in no way unique in this. This ideas about suspending people's passports if they sort of are under suspicion of going away to join ISIS or something.
Yeah, surveillance for 48 hours without warrants, which, I think we need to, in these times, we do need to be very careful about our civil liberties, because they're hard fought and easily lost and very difficult to get back again, because if Labour do get back in, no government wants to give away the power that they have.
It's really hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. So, there was the GCSB, obviously that strengthening in the last government. And it's sort of it's a worry. It's for me, as more of a civil libertarian, that's a worrying trend going forward.
I think we've got an interesting 6 months ahead. I think if, as we've predicted or as we've suggested, Labour get their act together and can actually act as an effective opposition, which, let's be honest, they just haven't for a long time.
Yeah.
And if a lot of these revelations and these commissions and these inquiries start coming back, and, although they're not damning in their entirety, they're still throwing up a lot of, what-ifs and questions. I think we do have an interesting 6 months ahead of us.
I think the thing on National side there is that a lot of the silt that's being kicked up by these commissions and investigations and inquiries will settle over the course of Christmas and New Year.
Hey, I want to touch on the American midterms, and it's sort of a year in review, I guess, somewhat, like
we
did this time last year. But is there anything particularly that, before we kind of wrap up New Zealand stuff, that particularly floated your guys' boat, lit your wick, that you want to throw out there now, look back on and see how it's panning out now, or is it mostly the election and the moving on?
No, that's been most of it. It's been
obviously
the crux of the year.
It's obviously been an election year, and it's been a wild ride. I mean, it was a pretty crazy election in many ways.
I noticed Laila Hari resigned from the Internet Party last week. I thought that kind of happened about the 20th of September, but it was last week.
Quitting a bankrupt business, isn't it? It's not that hard to do.
Yeah, that would have, she would have had to write it out and wait for her last paycheck. That would be awkward, eh? To suck so badly in an election but still get quite well paid for it.
Yeah, that'd suck to get quite well paid for doing that.
Yeah, that's awful.
That would suck. Terrible.
So, yeah, it's so the American midterms. Let's talk about overseas.
The Democrats obviously got a shellacking, but the thing I love about the American system, it is so disjointed, negatively so, that you kind of look, it's like Nelson off Simpsons. You just look and go, ha, ha, it's like, what are you guys doing? Because I'll say it now, right, and you guys feel free to disagree if you like, but the next president will be a Democrat. Because no matter what you say, the Republicans still haven't won women, youth, or minorities, and until they do, they're never going to get the presidency. But the people of America who don't get out to vote then screw the country themselves by giving them this disjointed system. And whoever the president is, Republican or Democrat, surely it makes more sense that they can work with the Senate, work with Congress to get stuff through rather than this constant fight. We're upset, so we're going to vote out the Democrats and bring in the Republicans into the House, and that means we're basically going to hold up the next 2 years of progress. It's just bizarre.
It is an amazing system. I mean, and news out again today at the time of recording that Chuck Hagel, the Secretary of Defense, has resigned.
Right.
Which was actually about the one example of bipartisanship that they have had for the last 3 years. I think he's been there since the last election.
Mm. So yeah, just after a year.
Two and a bit years. He was obviously a Republican candidate for a long time before that. Yeah, it's an interesting call about the next president being a Democrat.
I would put $50 on it with you now.
I do think... I mean,
either of you take me, you take me.
There's obviously no front runner for the Republican Party. And the ones who do, as has seemed to have been the case for quite a long time, as soon as they put their head above the parapet, it just gets blown off.
Oh, yeah.
You're Chris Christie's and you're that type.
Well, you know, you know, when your party is in the pocket of the NRA, getting your head blown off is
an apt analogy.
It's, yeah, absolutely.
For people who don't really follow the American system, right? I'll give you an example of how they work on their own agenda towards the presidency. Chris Christie is the example, right? There's this thing going on in the American political scene at the moment about sow crates for pigs, right? So women pigs, sows, female pigs being kept in crates so they can birth and then feed the piglets, then go off and get. You know, and there's an uproar in New Jersey, which is where Chris Christie is the
governor.
Yeah. And so everyone's saying, you know, we've got to ban this, we've got to ban this, we've got to ban this. He made a speech in the last 2 weeks to the Pig Farmers Association in Iowa and said, we will never ban pig crates. Now, there's like a 95% approval rating in New Jersey to ban pig crates. He's made a speech in Iowa saying we will never ban these sow crates. And the reason is Iowa is a swing state for the presidential
and the
nominee.
Largest pig farming
with 20 million pigs
in the world. Yeah.
There's 20 million pigs in Iowa, and there's something like 900,000 pigs in New Jersey. So he's making promises to a state he doesn't work in, because he's already thinking about himself as a presidential nominee.
You have a similar thing going on with the pipeline, the proposed pipeline from Alberta in Canada down through to the Gulf Coast in Louisiana, where a lot of promises are being made to states, to swing states, which that pipeline will go through, about the number of jobs that it might create. The fascinating moment there, though, where the Republicans, who I think only a year or two forced through a bill saying that the government couldn't, I forget the technical term, but it can't take private land for government use.
Right, compulsory acquisition.
Acquisition, yeah. There you go, yeah. But then there's a slight slab clause in there saying you can if it's good for the economy and if the negotiations have already started. So they're claiming to do exactly that. Yeah, there's a massive hypocrisy in a lot of the American system because of the way it's set up.
I think in the States now with the midterm, they gum up the works every 2 years, whether it's the midterms or the presidential. It's a great excuse for nothing to happen, which is it. But interestingly for me, as soon as the midterms were through, after 2 years of not doing anything, Barack Obama has made moves on immigration. He's starting to actually make policy. He's starting to push an agenda, which he could have done beforehand, but did not. He chose not to. So he's basically trying to do, as you suggested, Pat, advance the next presidential candidacy.
And now it has to be an executive decision because he's lost both houses and no one will ever agree with him.
Yeah, and so nothing will happen again.
And so then he'll be classed as a dictator and, as the quote came out the other day, the emperor of America. And you kind of go, they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. If they try to work with, you know, but they try and be bipartisan, it stalls. And if they go, well, fuck you then, we'll do what we want to do because that's what we were elected to do, then they become, you know, the Stalin.
Well, the Republicans are already saying that, he's saying, Obama's saying, you know, that the Senate need to vote on ISIS and, you know, whether or not, you know, to go to war and put troops in. They're saying he can do it by himself. Why doesn't he just do it by himself? But, of course, if he did it by himself, that would be the instant claim that he's taking America straight to war.
Well, hey, listen, this has been a fun, I don't know what we did, 20, 25 episodes? I don't know.
We did a few.
This year. The next few months. Now, Jeremy, 7 Days is doing a tour?
Yeah, we kick off a tour. We're running basically all of December in various sites. If you go to tv3.co.nz/7days, all the dates should be up there. They're also up on my Facebook page. And yeah, and that's kind of my last big run of shows leading up to Christmas.
Anything else? Anything on the next 6 month agenda for you, Chris? Other than lots of cycling, obviously.
No, I'm doing open mics. I'm trying to build a whole new set. I've thrown out all my material, so I'm trying to build a new set.
So sometimes you can. Do you comedians kind of do that? Do you? In fact, I was listening to. Is it called Funny? Talking Funny. Have you seen Talking Funny?
No.
It's an HBO documentary. It's got Ricky Gervais and Jerry Seinfeld.
Chris Rock and Louis C.K. Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, and they all sit around just talking about comedy. And it was interesting to get the different comedians there, like Jerry Seinfeld talking about he changes like 10% of his act every year, or 20%. So every 5 years there's a new show, whereas like Chris Rock, just everything's gone at the end of the year, it's a whole new show. What do you guys do?
Most comics in this country, we tend to rotate stuff in, so the new stuff will just slowly push the old stuff out.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've ever actually dumped all my material and tried to start again fresh.
Yeah, I'm. I think we do such a wide range of gigs here.
Yeah.
I mean, you will do, comedy club shows, but then you'll also do corporate events, and so you'll hang on to different material for different events. I mean, we don't have the pressure of someone like Chris Rock or Louis C.K., who once a year, their year's worth of material goes out on HBO and it's seen by millions of people.
Yeah.
We also don't make the money that is entailed with that. So, yeah, it's a bit of a mix.
Surely
You've got big news.
Oh, yes. No, we're leaving the Big Smoke, moving to the Medium Smoke.
Right. That's Auckland is the Big Smoke, by the way.
Auckland is the Big Smoke. And actually, we're recording this on the Tuesday. We're doing a Tuesday. This Saturday, the whānau is off to Dunedin to live.
Oh, well, good luck.
Yeah. I put the dog on the transporter this morning, so he's gone.
I like your timing, too. You're leaving when the Auckland's still kind of iffy in Auckland and going to Dunedin as it's just starting to improve. Good work.
So
I grew up in
good.
Dunedin as well, and believe me, you wouldn't have wanted to leave it a few months later. You're going to enjoy the winter, brother.
Yeah, so but the good news is for the podcast for next year, we've got access to a little studio down there. So we may, if we want to still continue to do this, we probably still can. So, facebook.com/slightlycorrect, whatever the Twitter one is, which I constantly forget. The general website is just slightlycorrect.com. Follow us on Facebook, probably the easiest way to do it. And then, I assume we'll probably get back into something next year. And
Absolutely.
If we do, you'll find out.
Listen to this space.
And our people in Otago, we'll see you in a few weeks' time.
But for now, for the rest of you, enjoy your Christmas. Be safe. Enjoy your New Year's. Enjoy whatever holiday you celebrate.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy
non-denominational
happy secular time off getting boozed and fat.
Be safe. Take care. This is Jeremy Elwood, Chris Brain, and Pat Brendan on the Slightly Correct Political Show, brought to you by podcasts.co.nz. We're out for 2014. Take it easy.
Cheers.